What do they?
A New Testament translation made in 390.
Oh, the canon? Yeah, that's not true.
That's true?
No.
Okay, I had it wrong.
Yeah, I know. That's what the critics say. They say, you know, the 4th century, 4th or 5th century, Pope and a bunch of Christians got together and they had these piles of books laying around and they voted on, I'll take that one, I'll take that one. Not true. Pardon?
When made
the canon? The canon was complete and accepted by the people of God when the last book was written, which was probably the book of Revelation, written before the end of the first century. And what we do in those 120 pages or so there is show that the test for canonicity were, was it written by a man of God who was confirmed by acts of God, who told truth about God, and that the people of God didn't determine the canon, they just discovered the canon. The canon was determined by God and discovered by man, and it was discovered immediately. I mean, when Moses got a revelation from God and he brought it down from Mount Sinai, the people accepted it immediately. When he wrote his books, they took his books and they put them up by the ark immediately. When Joshua succeeded him and he wrote a book, they took Joshua's book and they added it with Moses' book. When you go to Daniel chapter 9, Daniel is in exile, and he already has Jeremiah's book. Jeremiah and Daniel are contemporaries, and it says Daniel has the books of Moses and the prophets, including Jeremiah 25, and he's reading Jeremiah 25, and he knows the 70-year captivity is going to end. So he already had those books. When you come to the New Testament, you see Peter is saying, I got Paul's epistles, 2 Peter 3, 15 and 16. He already had a collection of Paul's epistles. They didn't wait for 200 or 300 years later and then somebody say, I don't know which one is Paul. They were immediately accepted and collected. Proof, the succeeding ones quoted the previous ones. The succeeding ones had a collection of the previous ones right in the New Testament period. And when the New Testament ended, every book of the New Testament and the Old Testament was immediately quoted in the second and third centuries. In fact, there were 36,000 quotations from the Bible in the second and third century in the Antonicene Fathers, and that's every verse in the Bible except 11 verses, just in the quotations of the Fathers. So if you destroyed 5,366 Greek manuscripts, if you destroyed 15,000 translations in Ethiopic and Coptic and Vulgate and Latin, destroyed every Bible on the face of the earth, millions and millions, actually probably closer to billions, you could go in the library and get the Antonicene Fathers out and reconstruct the whole New Testament minus 11 verses just from the quotations of the second and third century fathers. So it proves that the canon was immediately accepted. They didn't wait for 400 years to do it and then vote there. What were they doing 400 years later? There were debates, subsequent debates that arose about the authenticity of a given book. How did they decide it? They decided it by, did God determine and the people of God discover this book when it was written back there in the first century, whether it was the Word of God, and that settled the questions of authenticity, fourth century, because the question of canonicity had already been resolved first century. So the people are confusing authenticity debates and canonicity debates when they talk about 400 getting together and people voting and popes deciding and all of that.
But I thought that Jacob, the first time Jacob is contrary to Paul,
yeah,
I've heard
that true. I've heard it also. It's not true. There are a lot of things that you hear. You hear all kinds of things. That's a liberal theory that is about as dead as liberalism is dead. There's no truth. Paul and
I got a direction from conservatives.
Yeah, well, from somebody who claims to be a conservative, you got it from. You didn't get it from a conservative scholar. We got it. Page 9, the top. Realism is the position of Aquinas, that we can know something about God. And we've already argued for that, so we won't go into detail, because the argument we gave was basically Aquinas' argument that we know something exists, and we know nothing can't cause something, so we know that there must have been some eternal necessary being that caused the rest of what is not eternal and necessary to exist. So we can know something. We know that he is. We know that he's necessary, that he's eternal, that he's personal, that he's moral, that he's intelligent. Now note, all but view number 5 are inconsistent or self-defeating. Every one of these other views that we just took a look at, right down through fideism, agnosticism, skepticism, rationalism, fideism, are all inconsistent or self-defeating or both. For example, I know that I cannot know, or doubt everything, including this. Now, if all of the rest of the views are inconsistent or self-defeating, all we have to do is take a look at this view, realism, and see if it's inconsistent or self-defeating. Is it inconsistent to say, I know something? No. Is it inconsistent to say, something exists, or self-defeating? No. Is it inconsistent to say, God exists? No. There is no inconsistency or self-defeating nature about realism. There is something inconsistent or self-defeating about all non-realisms. Therefore, realism is true. All non-realisms are false. There is, to me, such a painful contorted attempt by contemporary philosophy to avoid the obvious that one wonders why the world is so philosophically screwed up and mixed up, when the simple truth of the matter is that they're right in the, it's like somebody right in the middle of the Atlantic Ocean trying to philosophize whether or not there's water. Here's somebody right in the middle of being, right in the middle of existing, right in the middle of reality, and they're sitting down and saying, I wonder if there's anything real. Man, you're right in the middle of the Atlantic. I can tell you for sure there's water, you know. Just look around. You're right in it. Realism is so obvious that people miss it, and yet it's the person on the street, the common sense person whose mind has not been corrupted by philosophy, understands it. So maybe what we need to do is what Martin Buber did in his book, The Eclipse of God. He said, you know what has eclipsed God from the modern mind? Philosophy. Intellectual structures. Ideologies. We let all of these get between us and reality. And God has been eclipsed by modern man's systems and his thinking. And if there's anyone who's contributed to that eclipse more than Immanuel Kant or David Hume, I'd like to know who it was. In a modern world, we are in the real world. Start where we are, analyze what we have, and logically move on from there, from reality to reality, not from abstract to the abstract, or from idea to idea. All right, anything about the realistic proposition? C, truth is correspondence to reality. Now we get into what truth is. Reality is, and truth is what corresponds to reality. It's very important how you define truth, because how you define truth will determine how your entire system comes out. If you define truth as what works, William James, pragmatism, then you'll miss reality, because a lot of reality